BBC News This Morning, News and Views with Jonathan Freewin. Jonathan, a very good morning to you and welcome to Cape Talk.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Over the weekend, I've been watching the news, and increasingly over the recent weeks, we've seen protests in China over the zero COVID lockdowns. And what should we be looking out for this particular week? Because it's unusual for China to go into this kind of protest, isn't it?
That's right. Yes, some analysts have said that what we've seen over the weekend is the most substantial challenge to the Chinese government since the Tiananmen Square protest back in 1989. It's going to be very interesting to see how the government responds to this unrest. The latest round began when lockdown rules were blamed by people in China when 10 people died recently in a tower block fire in Urumqi in northwest China. The authorities there deny that COVID restrictions caused the deaths, but officials in the city did issue an unusual apology late on Friday and pledged to restore order by phasing out restrictions. Some observers have also suggested that people seeing crowds of unmasked people in the stands at World Cup football matches may also be highlighting to ordinary Chinese how differently things are managed in other parts of the world. Thousands of protesters turned out in Shanghai over the weekend. People were heard openly shouting slogans like Xi Jinping step down and Communist Party step down. Demands like that are a very unusual sight in China, where direct criticism of the government and the president can result in harsh penalties. Some people held blank white pieces of paper, which had become something of an emblem of these protests, a symbol of defiance against Chinese censorship. Others lit candles and laid flowers in memory of the victims in Urumqi. Now, colleagues of mine saw people bundled into police cars in the wake of all of that. It's, of course, pretty brave for people to protest, because such an arrest doesn't necessarily mean just a night in the cells. You know, people have been known to just disappear. And the BBC journalist Ed Lawrence was detained for several hours covering the protests in Shanghai. He said that he was beaten and kicked before being released, although China claims today that he didn't identify himself as a journalist. That seems hard to believe. But analysts say the government appears to have drastically underestimated growing discontent towards China's zero COVID approach, where entire apartment blocks can be locked down if just one person within the building tests positive for coronavirus. And of course, the policy is inextricably linked to Xi Jinping, who recently pledged there would be no swerving from it. There were protests over the weekend also in Beijing and Nanjing, and people came out onto the streets in Wuhan, where COVID was first found. A challenge that China faces, though, is that the country keeps on recording record COVID case numbers, up to 40,000 today. And it's tricky to imagine an alternative approach in China to the zero COVID strategy. And that's in part because there's been a pretty low take up of COVID vaccines in the country among the elderly part of the population most at risk of being killed by coronavirus. Around half have had two shots of a vaccine that there are questions about the efficacy of. So if the government were to let COVID run wild, there's a risk that it would face a lot of fatalities among those most vulnerable to the disease.
And I think that has been the case with COVID. You know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And that puts the governments in a very difficult position to decide as to whether or not to, you know, take these very sort of harsh measures in order to keep the rate down. Moving on to Hong Kong this morning, Jonathan, and the tycoon of the newspaper and newspaper publisher, Jimmy Lai, goes on trial under Hong Kong's national security law this week. What actually is the background to this particular case?
Well, Jimmy Lai is a larger-than-life entrepreneur. He's aged 74, who has something of a rags-to-riches story. He's been one of the most prominent supporters of Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement, but a persistent thorn in China's side. At the age of 12, he fled his village in mainland China, arriving in Hong Kong as a stowaway on a fishing boat, then went from toiling in a Hong Kong sweatshop to founding a multi-million-dollar clothing empire. But when China sent in tanks in 1989 to crush those pro-democracy protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square, Mr. Lai began a journey as a vocal democracy activist in addition to being an entrepreneur. He founded a media empire centered around this Apple Daily newspaper, which was previously widely read in Hong Kong but shut down in the middle of last year. Now, Jimmy Lai is currently serving a shortish sentence on charges of unauthorized assembly, but this week he faces court on national security charges, which carry a potential life sentence. The national security law that was introduced to Hong Kong in 2020 was criticized at the time for potentially breaching the terms of the agreement between the UK and China when Hong Kong was handed back to China in 1997. Under that agreement, freedoms such as freedom of assembly and speech were supposed to be protected. The national security law criminalizes acts of secession, breaking away from the country, subversion, undermining the authority of the central government, and collusion with external forces. Now, one notable aspect of cases involving the new law is that they're not held in front of a jury, but rather a panel of Beijing-appointed judges. Just last week, six former employees of Apple Daily pleaded guilty to colluding with so-called foreign forces, and the six accepted the charge. charge after accusations of treason were dropped. Their guilty plea could well be a factor in the case against Jimmy Lai this week, and some of those pleading guilty may end up giving evidence against their former boss, Jimmy Lai. But a former executive of Apple Daily, now living in New York, argued to the BBC last week that the collusion accusation amounted to simply publishing material in Hong Kong that had been written by foreigners, such as the former governor of Hong Kong, Chris Patten. The case against Jimmy Lai is set to last for a couple of months, and on the face of it, it looks likely that he will be convicted and face a substantial jail sentence, possibly even spending the rest of his life behind bars.
Mm. And on Thursday, United States President Joe Biden hosts his first formal state visit, and this time around it is with President Macron of France. What is the significance between these two heads of state chatting to each other and this particular state visit?
Well, this is the first time since the establishment of France's Fifth Republic in 1958, founded by Charles de Gaulle, that a French president has been invited to make two state visits to the US. President Macron was also given one back in 2018 when Donald Trump was president. As you mentioned, this is President Biden's first state visit since he became president, and that's partly down to the after effects of the COVID pandemic. But it's certainly quite an honor for Mr. Macron. It's worth remembering a state visit involves a lot more pomp and ceremony than a regular visit from a head of state, military inspections, glamorous state banquets, and so on. Now, when announcing the visit back in September, the White House press secretary said that it would underscore the deep and enduring relationship between the US and France, America's oldest ally. And that, of course, is a reference back to how France sided with the US in its war of independence against the UK. But it's also significant because of how relations between the US and France were quite heavily dented last year. Australia had been planning to buy a fleet of submarines from France, but those plans changed when the terms of what's called AUKUS, the security pact between Australia, the United Kingdom, and the US, were announced, under which Australia would buy nuclear submarines with assistance from the UK and US instead, and cancelled plans to procure those from France. France recalled its ambassadors to the two countries in response, and relations are set to go into the deep freeze. I think a number of things have happened since that have led to something of a thawing, not least Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which puts the US and France very much on the same page.
0214460567 and on the WhatsApp line on 0725671567, and that's BBC News Views with Jonathan Freeman.